Okay. I arranged this PowerPoint presentation the way I thought would be the best. But as those of you who use PowerPoint presentation, you probably know it's always a problem. You set up, you arrange your PowerPoint presentation, you bring it somewhere, and then you start talking to people and listen to their response, and suddenly you see that your PowerPoint presentation doesn't fit quite well in what are the needs and interests of your audience. So this is my ideal PowerPoint presentation for the audience which thinks like me, which never is the case, of course. So I'll tell you a couple of things about Media Diversity Institute, then we will move to the concept of diversity and then concept of multiculturalism as understood in Britain and some other societies, and then we'll move to interculturalism, which is, it seems, getting more and more popular in Europe as maybe more suitable concept. Then I'll talk about the role of media in these processes about training in particular. I hope I'll be half an hour, doing only presentation for half an hour, and then I'd appreciate very much if you come with your questions and suggestions. But what I would in particular appreciate if our colleague respond as soon as I do my little presentation with your thoughts, what I said, how that can sound in the context of academia and journalism and sociology in this Czech society. So here I am starting. What you can see, I'm not going to read what you see on the screen. I'm just going to use this as a kind of reminder. So we are trying to encourage media, in particular news media, to embrace diversity and portray and reflect diversity, because diversity is something which is common in every society on this planet, and if we journalists want to reflect what is out there in our society, so diversity is the component which needs to be reflected in our everyday work. Where media diversity works, it's, as you can see, in different regions, but mainly in the regions, in the societies where media, particularly news media, have played a destructive role or might have played a destructive role. As I already mentioned when I talked about my background, I learned how dangerous media can be on my own skin, literally and metaphorically, because, of my work on Television Serbia, which even my own parents couldn't understand when we started trying to, start to fight propaganda. My own father said, "Why don't you calm down and do your job? Why are you interfering with politics?" And I said to my father, "I'm not producing croissants, I'm producing news." So it is, like it or not, always linked to politics, though, as I'm sure you would all agree, everything is politics. So we work in so-called old regions, Europe, former Soviet countries, Middle East, Western Africa. This is our old regions, and new regions, Indonesia and North Africa. Actually, we just talked with my colleague from Lincoln University. We just started doing a little project in Egypt, and that's for us quite new and quite exciting job because of all this, as they call it, war on terror and lack of dialogue between different cultures, in particular between Muslim and non-Muslim cultures, and then diverse communities within Muslim communities, something we people outside of Islam very seldom take into consideration, that within Islam there are so many different options which are worth discussing and taking into consideration. What is diversity? You can see Oxford Dictionary explanation: the condition or quality of being diverse, different, or varied, difference, unlikeness. what we consider as diversity in our everyday work in Media Diversity Institute is qualities which make me different of you, or the group I belong to different from the group you belong to, be it race, ethnicity, gender, nationality, income-based differences or social status, sexuality, just being different from each other, not better or worse, something we as journalists often forget. Is the concept of diversity something new? When we did the first conference on this issue 10 years ago, 18th of November, 10 years ago, we had Michael Ignatieff, who at that time was a prominent journalist and thinker in Britain, and currently is a very active politician in Canada and probably becoming a prime minister of Canada. He talked about the, you know, liberal democracy and history of liberal democracy, and said something we found really very important for what we do, is that the history of liberal democracy has always been about white men of certain age. Women got a voice only recently, and not in all, you know, countries. Black people are still struggling, you know, in some countries for the recognition. Roma people are still struggling for recognition, you know, of their basic human rights. So it's something which is in a way new in so-called developed world and in so-called developing world. And I listed here just different concepts of approaching diversity, and you can see, I'm sure you're all familiar with the melting pot concept, which is very American, people coming from different parts of the world and becoming, you know, trying to become Americans as soon as possible, you know, and like my, when I used to work for New York University, I had this taxi driver in New York who came from Romania maybe 3-4 years before I met him. But he was already such a strong New Yorker accent with such a strong Eastern European accent. We Eastern Europeans never lose, and we don't need to lose it, I think. But he was like, I gonna go to have my children go to college. I gonna go to put my wife to college. He was already getting into his Americanisms, which was fascinating to watch. You have civic assimilation, which is quite typical for France, which is changing now because of the riots France had now 2 years ago. I was in France last week and I could see how big changes suddenly are happening in France. Like the first black presenter on television in France was introduced a year and a half ago. The first program about non-traditional sexual oriented people was introduced again only a year ago. Something when you compare with Britain, quite interesting to observe, but you know, the concept is changing. Ethnic nationalism concept, which you can maybe recognize in Germany and Japan, which is again in Germany changing, and I'm sure that our friends from Goethe Institute and Stiftung, thank you, would contribute much better, and it would be interesting to hear how, you know, what you think about this. Salad bowl approach, as my journalist colleague from Canada call it. He says, we in Canada, and he's black, and he's a journalist, and he's an expert in measuring diversity, which is something I still don't understand how he does, but it's... he says, we in Canada, we are like in salad bowl. We come from all around the world. We get mixed in this salad bowl. There is a bit of Canadian dressing, but you can still recognize the elements. Cucumber, tomato, whereas in a melting pot, everything is goulash. Then laissez-faire Italy and Spain, where they are probably just looking really for the ways you know, how to deal with the issues of immigrants, particularly in Italy after the fall of communism, many, you know, people particularly from Albania moving from Northern Africa, Spain and Italy, recent example which we used the other day, you know, that a Roma person from Romania killed a lady in Italy, and suddenly Italy, you know, started actually using this new law which allows them to expel the whole groups of people if they think they can be potentially dangerous for society. To many people, it looked like really like deportation, and Guardian had art reports from Italy which were really disturbing. And when I used the articles from the Guardian at this conference, Council of Europe conference last week in Paris, my Italian colleagues got upset. They said, "Oh, we never heard that prefect of Rome said what you said." So what I found in the Guardian, according to the Guardian, the prefect, which is the top policeman of the capital of Italy, said, "We are going to deport these people. This is what you do with animals." That's what the Guardian said. My Italian colleague said that it was never said. So here we're back to what the media do and how they should do and how sensitive they should be. And we have the concept of multiculturalism as in the Netherlands and the UK. And I'll just maybe move to this concept multiculturalism because I talk about media, because I think this is something very important. The concept of multiculturalism as understood in particular in Britain, as you can see, equal rights, which brings anti-discrimination laws and things like that, cultural difference encouraged, diversity in public life, media, business, etc., separate cultural facilities, which means like I have my cultural center, you have your cultural center, I have my school, you have your school, I have my religious object, church, mosque, synagogue, you have yours, and things like that. You can see the rest. It was when I came to Britain 15 years ago, it was a new concept, and everyone was very passionate about it, either being pro or against. But then it took over, and Labour's got in power, and this is in particularly, you know, Labour's are very fond of this concept. The debate on whether this is the right concept for Britain started several years ago in actually not very famous magazine, Prospect, which came with the editorial, "Too much diversity?" question mark. So everyone who was in this multicultural issues and pro the concept attacked the Prospect, even though there was a question mark. It was not claiming the article, but it was just, let's discuss the concept. And I want you just to pay attention to actually the sentence which came out of someone who is one of the most prominent figures in Britain when we talk about multiculturalism, Trevor Phillips, who was the chair of Commission for Racial Equality, and now this year this commission turned into Human Rights and Equality Rights Commission, so he's a chair of that commission. What he said a year ago, "We are sleepwalking our way to segregation. Britain must scrap multiculturalism." Being such an important figure, prominent figure, being black himself, so someone coming from, as they call in Britain, visible minorities, it was almost a shock to hear. But Trevor Phillips is known as a controversial figure who wants, you know, to shake society a bit, which is not bad for any society. So basically, the debate is now going on. Is this concept good enough? What is the version we should go for? And is the option interculturalism the option for societies with many different communities? Can someone just give me an idea what you think is the percentage of visible minorities, well, ethnic minorities in Britain? Give me an idea what you think. 15%? Cold. Or maybe if someone comes with 30, then you were hot. Let's see. Come on, we are all in the same business. 40? Very cold. Very cold. Yeah, 6.9%. 6.9%. But when you watch British television, or so you probably get different impression, maybe because, or you've been in London, and London is very multicultural, as every, you know, capital, like more than 200 languages spoken. Well, with this percentage, when we go to countries such as my beloved Serbia, where 30% of citizens of Serbia are not Serbs, and when you mention this figure, it gets, you know, people get shocked because they think, you know, Britain is. So with this small percentage, there is huge ethnic minorities, there is a huge commitment on many instances, you know, to find a solution, better solution maybe than multiculturalism. And this is one of the options being discussed now, not only in Britain, in the Netherlands too, and Council of Europe has become very fond of this concept. They have now even this program called Intercultural Cities, where they encourage cities with the interest in, you know, embracing this concept, you know, to do it. And if you go through the concept, here is what it says: recognize differences, seek out similarities, highlight hybridity, downplay purity, a singly diverse public sphere, resource the places where cultures meet, resource bridge builders, not gatekeepers. Don't avoid conflict, embrace it, manage it. Which concept would suit which society is really a matter of, you know, that particular society, and I would like our colleague to maybe comment on this. Shall I keep this? Okay. The question is here, where is the role of media in all these discussions? We in Media Diversity Institute have our definition of journalism. We call it responsible journalism, and it's what I already mentioned: fair, accurate, balanced, in-depth, and sensitive journalism. We believe if journalists, if editor of the Politiken in Denmark, which published the paper which published the famous cartoons, if the editor was just a bit sensitive, he would probably think twice and maybe still publish the cartoons, but maybe with some, you know, comments, you know, something, because whatever we feel about our religion, people in other religions feel different. And if you want a peace in your society, and everyone wants peace, then you have to be a bit sensitive when you decide how to report. We cooperate very much with Leicester Mercury, which is a newspaper in Leicester, in Britain. Leicester Mercury is the third biggest regional newspaper in Britain, very popular in that region. And Leicester is the region with lots of ethnic minorities, and most of them have moved to Britain only over the last two decades. The latest one from Somalia. So there is a lot of tension often between different communities. And what happens in Leicester is so common in all the countries where we've been working. Those who came only two decades ago, now when they see newcomers, they say, oh, we don't need them. They don't speak English. They are foreigners. They don't know our culture. We've seen that in many cultures. You came only two decades ago, but now you are on barricades. So Leicester Mercury editor Nick Carter told us that sometimes they decide to go even for censoring themselves if publishing a report on a conflict between members of two communities can cause further conflict between the two communities. That's something I would like you to respond, like, you know, we are also very sensitive to censorship as journalists, yet, you know, because of our past, historic past, you know, and the government treating journalists as social political workers, but it's something we're discussing, you know, and that's something I'd like maybe to propose as a topic for our workshop. Why to work with media? I think if you came to this event, you already understand why there is a need to work with media. You already understand the power of media. So I'm not going to go too much into this, but basically media can be the bridge between communities if they can enhance and contribute to the conflict, as Television Serbia unfortunately did, but it was not the only one. I'm sure you've heard of Radio La Colline in Rwanda, which was even worse than Television Serbia. So we believe that the media can be the weapons against certain groups, certain individuals. Well, they can be also a good means or tools to promote a dialogue, to open their studios, microphones and pages for a dialogue, because we believe that journalists are not more intelligent than anyone else. And instead of journalists telling people what they should think, offering them what we call, you know, enough information to make what we call informed decision on certain issues. So that's why a space for dialogue, and particularly now after we have this war on terror or whatever they call it, dialogue between cultures is very important, and within cultures. And that's where media can really play good role, being a forum, as you can see here, for a dialogue. I mentioned already what kind of journalism. We call it responsible journalism, and we often forget, you know, as journalists, how powerful we can be. What media can do, I mentioned most of that, but I want to draw your attention to look for common ground, because regardless how different we are, we all want to have good lives. We all want to be respected in our societies. We all want to contribute to our societies. We all want to be successful. So we all have what we call common values, and that's where media have to, we believe, to head towards common ground. So on one side, individual interests, specific interests, and on the other, common interests and common grounds. So a balance between the two is difficult to achieve, but that's why we have editors who are well paid to think about it. I want to draw your attention to these two spheres, public and commercial. When we talk about responsibilities of media, it's much easier to discuss public media's responsibilities simply because they have legal obligations coming either from international documents, either we talk about UN declarations or European documents, human rights documents, or Council of Europe framework Convention for Protection of Ethnic Minorities, for instance, national minorities, or we talk about governmental state legal documents which obligate public broadcasters, public media to provide the space for different segments of the society. The problem is much more commercial media, because very often, as we all know, they're much more popular than public media, or in Britain, you know, this quality media, as they call it, such as public media, such as Guardian, and then on the other side you have tabloids, which are enormously popular, I'm sure, in the Czech Republic as well, because in many post-communist societies, the so-called tabloidization has started ages ago. It's very difficult, you know, to balance, you know, responsibility and entertainment and tabloid concept. In Britain, you have tabloidization of serious media as well. It's not only, you know, post-communist model, absolutely. Things you find now in The Guardian or Financial Times or Independent were unimaginable 10 years ago. I did my MA in international journalism in Britain, and I remember when that was at the time when Michael Jackson, the singer, had his first affair and court case for molesting children. The details of his story, what he did or didn't do to a little boy, put on a cover page of The Independent, were unimaginable only 2 years before that. So tabloidization is something very serious, and the question is, how do you convince commercial media that embracing diversity is also the way of providing profit and bringing money? That's the carrot they understand. This is what can bring you the money. So this is something we discussed a lot, and I would like also to discuss this with you. How do you see it, which way that could go? I just want to show you examples of, these are bad photos, unfortunately, because I didn't have time to put it properly. This used to be a BBC logo some 10 years ago. As you can see, the globe coming to us Londoners. Then it's changed into something. This is BBC logo or ident, whatever you call it, you know. Disabled young man of different background, dancing basketball, hip-hop. It's they have now new idents. BBC, even though it's been trying to be as politically correct as possible, with the plan to have 10% of people working in BBC coming from visible ethnic minorities by 2012, there is still huge criticism of BBC, and one of them is, you know, you can see the headlines, BBC is still showing its hideously white face. You can see a lot of people on BBC coming from visible ethnic minorities, but it's not enough in the opinion of many people. This is a typical picture of East European asylum seekers in British tabloids. A beggar mother with a child. Tabloids misuse this fact of immigrants from Eastern Europe coming to Britain a lot in their stories. I just want to show you one girl, 20, gang raped by asylum seekers. And as in many countries, people in Britain read newspapers, most of them on their way to the office, which means, you know, they open the newspapers, see the headlines and close it. So this is the impression they have. These asylum seekers come to rape our young ladies. When you read the lead, which is bad copy, but trust me, it says here, a woman walking home after a night out was gang raped on the pavement by three men thought to be asylum seekers. When you read the whole article, there is no mentioning of who did it. These are just examples. I think I have to rush now. My half an hour is getting out. I can show you this at the workshop for those who stay. I just want to make a couple of points. The importance of training for journalists, like in every profession, doctors, medical doctors, every now and then they have seminars to update themselves on what's happening in their profession. So we journalists need the same, otherwise we lose the, you know, the momentum. These are typical products of MDI, Media Diversity Institute trainings. We always produce something at the trainings. This is a newspaper supplement on religious minorities in Georgia, which was published in five national newspapers and in English, because unfortunately we don't speak Georgian. So I want to make just two points. The very essence of democracy is inclusiveness, not exclusiveness. And the last, but very, very, very important, everyone has prejudice. I have prejudice. You have prejudice. And that's something which is very, very deeply defaulted in our beings, in our psyche. It's difficult to get rid of, but if we want to be professional, responsible journalists, we have to learn to manage our prejudice. That's how we can go beyond bad journalism. That's what I wanted to share with you at this point. Thank you. Thank you. Should I move back?